I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Resistance. Is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is
my
Fan Effect.
Hello, I'm Andy Farnsworth, and welcome to another episode of Fan Effect, presented by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. 31 years ago, a movie based on a stand-up comedy routine that two writers used to perform when they were in college became a box office success and spawned two sequels, a video game, a cartoon series, a live-action TV series, a breakfast cereal, and even an annual Halloween party at world-famous theme parks. The two writers were Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon, and their creation was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Whoa. No way!
Yes way!
I'm Bill S. Preston!
Who was Joan of Arc?
Noah's wife?
We're in danger of flunking most heinously tomorrow.
Can we go anywhere we want at any time?
You can do anything you want.
Historical babes.
How's it going, royal ugly dudes?
Put them in the Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden? Excellent!
Execute them.
Bogus.
If you guys are really us, what number are we thinking of?
69, dudes! Excellent!
Party on, dude.
Now we're in the year 2020, which, let's face it, was an unimaginably far away in the future back in 1989. And Bill and Ted are back with a long-rumored and, for some, long-awaited third chapter in what is now a trilogy of films. Bill and Ted Face the Music was one of the first big movies released to theaters in the United States since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. And honestly, I think it was the perfect time. Joining me for this episode is Salt Lake City's KSL5 TV morning news anchor and avowed fan of both Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan, Dan Spindle.
Big Wild Stallions fan. Love
Wild Stallions.
Wild Stallions. That's right.
That's how I should have said it. A fan of Wild Stallions. Dan, welcome to what my relatives have probably called, quote, possibly the most important podcast on the interweb, unquote.
Just your children. Just the relatives.
Maybe my siblings, too, friends. Welcome to Fan Effect.
Hey, thank you, because I've introduced you forever on the television side as Andy Farnsworth, host of blah, blah, blah. I mean, all the Fan Effect podcast, and he does the
traffic. I've noticed that sometimes you guys speed over that Fan Effect podcast a little bit. I'm hoping by having you on, now it will get the proper
billing that it needs. All of your titles, it's like saying Bill S. Preston Esquire or Ted Theodore Logan, and together we are Wild Stallions. I mean, by the time you get done with it, you're out of time.
That's true. I guess I should reduce my titles a little bit so I have more time talking about the movie.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
It's good. Well, let's start by talking about the latest entry into the series, Bill and Ted Face the Music. A little bit later, we'll go into the history of the Bill and Ted franchise, which I guess you have to call it a franchise now, since all the things I just listed off have come about since that movie premiered in February of 1989, when I was in seventh grade, by the way.
I was a little younger. Just a little bit, because you've got me by a couple years, but really, it was the perfect age to kind of receive the Bill and Ted surfer dude,
experience.
You know, Ninja Turtles kind of.
That's
right.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes if the Ninja Turtles are partially based on Bill and Ted, what they ended up going with, because the original Ninja Turtles were fairly violent.
Michelangelo, at least, you know, with kind of the surfer dude thing. And we'll get into that. But, I mean, look at Wayne's World, you know, which was right around the same time, too. So,
but for people of a certain age, it is intertwined with their childhood.
No doubt. Yeah.
So let's go to Bill and Ted Face the Music. Here's a clip.
When your wives suggested couples therapy, do you think that this is what they had in mind?
Definitely. I mean, we're a couple of couples, right?
They
Bill, Ted,
enough of the delusions. You didn't time travel.
And you didn't go to heaven and hell.
Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
Bill, we've spent our whole life trying to unite the world. And I'm tired, dude.
Ted, we have a destiny to fulfill.
So, we rejoin our eternally positive SoCal rocker dudes, Stoners, which, by the way, I'd never thought of as a kid, but
never.
There is no question that they were Stoners.
Yeah, we were too young.
And even in Face the Music, the first scene where Billy and Thea see Kristen Schaal show up.
Dude, our dads are totally in trouble. We should help them out.
Yeah.
They're munching on Cheetos and licking their fingers, which is an obvious, obvious allusion.
It was always kind of
why do you get the munchies for Cheetos? I know, and I never caught it. In fact, I didn't even catch it on the first viewing. It was when I rewatched the clip that I was like, oh, duh, they're Stoners too, just like their parents. So, at any rate, Bill and Ted are married to the English princesses from the 1400s, the Babes.
Of course.
And they have the daughters, Billy S. Preston Esquire.
Who is Ted's daughter.
And then Theodora Logan.
And that's Bill's daughter, I mean, which is funny because
they named their kids after
in
each other.
In honor of
now,
themselves.
They were boys as babies. Oh, those were boy babies.
Oh, is that what we're saying back in? Because I haven't watched.
I was assuming. I rewatched
Bogus Journey.
Bogus Journey right before I saw it. I thought this was a clever go around.
Oh, yeah.
So, at any rate, they're no longer world music icons that they were at the end of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And
right.
All the headlines were talking about, you know,
world peace.
Fairly enough, they did sow the idea that it could be this way by Death wanting to break away and go solo
of
and
course,
all those things.
So in the credits.
They set the table to where this could be like, it wasn't. Bogus Journey wasn't really, really the end, although supposedly we assumed it was. Of course, we also assumed it was at the end of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Right.
And we now assume it is again at the end of Face the Music.
Which after a 30-year hiatus, I mean, a lot of franchises, as you know, as a movie pop culture guy, they try and bring them back, and it's the worst idea ever. And I have to admit, for nostalgia purposes, I heard Bill and Ted 3, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And you see pictures of Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter doing the things that they do to shoot the scenes. And I thought, well, that it appeals to nostalgia, but is it a good idea? Will it be executed well? And I thought, I don't know.
Considering, so the first two Bill and Ted movies come out 2 years apart,
right,
1989, 1991. And for me, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey was just it always seemed to me just a shameless try to grab the popularity while it's still there.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, because in between they launched the animated series in 1990, and then in 1991 they launched the second season of the animated series. The first season of the animated series had George Carlin and Bill, Alex
it
Winter,
did.
And Keanu Reeves.
I've but completely forgotten about that, and I know for a fact I watched it. I must have watched it. I must have. That was my introduction to George Carlin. Isn't that funny? Because I saw George
from the cartoon from the movie?
From the movie, and then he was in the cartoon.
Yes.
And as I, you know, got through the 90s and
for
saw
a bunch of white kids
comedian,
like us who probably didn't
we were
have
not
a lot of exposure
to the
full
the seven,
adult version of things.
What is it?
Seven things you can't say on TV.
Yeah. So then I thought, wait a second, that guy,
and none
Rufus,
of,
is a
never
comedian?
Said any of those seven things when we've been on TV.
Never did.
Right?
Never did.
That's good.
Can't pin it on us
Let's
at all.
Let's keep it that way.
But yeah, Bill and Ted was this hot commodity and spawned how many copycats in the world of pop culture? I mean, I'm thinking specifically of like Three Ninjas. I don't know if you remember this.
I never
but
watched that
Three Ninjas
that
had these, you know.
What if it, and of, you could hear the movie pitches in Hollywood.
Oh.
It's like Bill and Ted, only if they're teenage
exactly.
ninjas.
Well, how long have they said Bill and Ted? And Bill and Ted is, whoa, surfer dude. I mean, Keanu Reeves has been that guy, Ted, forever. And everything he's in, even in The Matrix, when they say, oh, what a great character. However,
there's one time
like
where Keanu
Ted.
Reeves says, whoa,
whoa, whoa. Yeah, I mean, he's been trying to distance himself. Great actor, too. I mean, great franchises, very bankable Hollywood star. And yet, you always think of Ted. I do, anyway.
It became iconic. Obviously, it was never meant to be iconic. In fact, one of the things that the writers said, or it was either the writer or execs at the studio who picked it up, this is either going to be a classic or an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
There really wasn't any in between. And even the execs, when they saw the cut of the film, they were like, do kids really talk like that? And
oh boy.
One of the things that convinced them was some test screenings where they just pulled kids out of the mall and showed it to them.
But see, I always dreamed of that when I was a kid.
So awesome.
Walking through the mall. And I swear it happened here and there with either timeshares or whatever it was. The mall was the place to kind of test and put your finger on the pulse of what society thought and young people thought. That's I can just picture that, walking through the mall as a kid. I mean, I was the perfect age. Like we said, you were a little bit older. But I mean, from the age of 8 to 14, that was the demographic that watched Bill and Ted and thought that it was just fantastic. Airheads. I just thought of that.
Airheads,
with Adam Sandler,
yes,
with, and Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser,
and,
Brendan
Steve
Fraser
Buscemi.
By the way, auditioned for Bill and Ted.
Oh, he did.
Yes.
See, again, Airheads was kind of like, a, I don't know, not a spinoff, but the Bill and Ted idea. Pauly Shore
it was
doing
to
his
take,
whole
Pauly
thing.
Pauly Shore had also auditioned, which that can't
again,
be surprising.
Well,
considering the era and the time and his
persona.
Well,
Pauly Shore was incredibly successful with his series of movies that were all basically the same character.
Well, now let's,
I mean, all the Pauly Shore character.
Let's be a little careful with what we say very successful.
Listen, you take a... You
he
take
got
a,
the movies made.
You
we
take
can say
three
that.
Or four-year span. What, In the Army Now? Biodome?
Jury Duty.
The point being, it was this.
The In-Laws.
Doofy,
or what, was that the one where he's on the...
A son-in-law.
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 That was
law.
The only one that I think you could... And Encino Man.
Encino Man, yes.
If you're edge because I'm wheezing on your grind, it's just chill. Because if I had the whole Brady Bunch thing happen at my pad, I'd go grind over there. So don't tax my gig so hardcore, Custer.
Those
See,
are the two you could
guys,
honestly say were fairly successful.
But they owe it. I mean, they had their own shtick, but they owe it to Bill and Ted. They really do.
I think that's a fair
And I guess the Ninja Turtles, but I don't know.
And perhaps the movie Valley Girl from early 1980s with a Nick Coppola, later Cage.
I forgot my comb.
Really now?
Well, to tell you the truth, I kind of thought that maybe you and I could get out of here.
Like, I don't think you'd be any more welcome down there right now.
I mean, let's leave the party.
I'm so sure.
Wearing a popped collar,
oh,
Izod shirt.
Now, I need to go back and look at this. That's a little bit probably ahead of my time. In the early 80s, I was probably
He wasn't even Nick Cage
on,
yet.
He was
Nick
Coppola. Nick
Coppola.
Until he decided he's got to change it.
He can make it on his own.
That's
and he
right.
did make it on his
he,
own.
He made it on his own, Nick Cage.
So, Bill and Ted are no longer world music icons.
25 years ago, you played a concert in front of the entire world. 1 month ago, you played in Barstow, California for 40 people, most of whom were there for $2 taco night.
They have been now reduced to playing local weddings, including possibly the 14th or 15th time for Missy.
Yeah,
this
we
time
don't have
she's
to say,
marrying Deacon.
And we don't have to say, like, spoiler alert on this. Just know that we're going to discuss the
yeah,
whole
we're
movie, right?
Spoil
okay,
whatever.
Good. Well, that, I thought, first of all, as I went into this, I will say, full disclosure, I saw the trailer because I was kind of excited, saw the trailer, and I thought, no, it's going to be garbage. It'll be terrible. And then I saw some of the reviews, and then I heard your review on KSL Today, and I thought, you know what? Andy's not going to, you know, throw me for a loop here. I'm going to give it a shot. My kids were excited because they had seen the Bill and Ted movies recently streaming somehow. I say recently in the last year or two. And we bought it, watched it. That, I mean, from the get-go, which was Bill and Ted at a wedding, which is funny in and of itself. But then that it's Missy's wedding to his younger brother, Deacon.
And that it's the original Missy actress.
Oh, and his dad sitting right there. I mean, just it was very
I was missing
funny,
Mr.
Right
Preston.
Yes.
Mr. Well, Preston was the professor guy that Missy was married to in the first
oh,
movie.
Oh, that's right.
Then
that's
she
right.
dumps him
right.
to be Ted's stepmom.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Missy. Hey, Missy. Mom. I can't believe Missy divorced your dad and married mine. Shut up, Ted. What's next?
Maybe she'll marry you.
Yeah, then you'll be your own stepdad.
And now she's dumped Ted's stepmom to marry Ted's brother.
That's right.
Yes.
But, it started off just with these funny beats. And it doesn't bash you over the head or anything. And it picks up where they are in life. And don't you think being dads at this age, had they made a movie for the 10 and 12 and 13-year-olds, it would have fallen flat. This one... It's made for people who were that age back in the
yes.
late 80s, early
and
90s.
That's to me, that was why I thought it was. See, I'm the opposite of you. You liked the idea, then you saw the clips and thought it would be a disaster.
Right.
I thought it would be a disaster when I heard the idea. And the trailer actually made me laugh. The trailer scene where they see themselves all buffed up, I didn't even realize that was them on the first viewing. It was the second viewing that I was like, oh my gosh,
that's pretty,
Bill and
those
Ted.
Special
and
effects.
And they were
fantastic.
All roided up.
Yeah.
And like, I just started laughing. I said, okay, maybe I might like this movie after all. And I hated Bogus Journey. I thought it was stupid. I thought
at the time or now?
Cash grab at the time. And then I rewatched it before I watched Face the Music, and it didn't get any better, with the exception of, is it William Sadler? Yeah. Anyway, guy who plays Death.
Oh, yeah, right. I'll have to look it up.
William Sadler, I believe.
Sure, the Grim Reaper.
Yes. He was hilarious, and I didn't remember him being so funny the first time I watched it.
I'm the opposite, because when I saw it when I was 10 years old, Bogus Journey, in the theater on a school night with my dad, which was like, you know, we never did that. But for some reason, my mom needed to use the house for some sort of a get-together, and so we went out.
And so you benefited.
Oh, my gosh. It was one of those great things. And I even dressed up that year for Halloween, fall of 1991, as the Grim Reaper.
Did you? From Bill and Ted's?
And I don't know that it was because of Bill and Ted, but I had seen him and I thought, well, that's an easy costume. White face, black under the eyes robe, and I made my own sickle, you know. And we have been doing lines from Bogus Journey with my kids for the last couple of years about when they play Clue.
I believe Colonel Mustard did it in the study with the candlestick.
Sorry, Death. You lose. It was Professor Plum.
I said Plum.
No way. You said Mustard.
Kids and I say, no way you said mustard, all the time. I mean, so we use these dumb lines. I think if I went back and watched it all the way through, it would be tough to watch. But
Dan, it's the dumb lines that are really what has made
memorable.
The movie live this long.
Bogus. Non-heinous.
And I don't know if it was because, you know, it's interesting, some of the reviews, see, we're jumping ahead. It's okay.
I know,
it's okay.
I know.
We're jumping ahead because this is where it goes. But
well, it's kind of a time travel.
One of the, true, we can jump all over the place. Remember to talk about this later.
That's right.
It was interesting that the original Bill and Ted, there was a famous quote from, I had it written down here somewhere. In the Los Angeles Times, Chris Willman's review in 1989 included the quote, "Make no mistake, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is not a satire of mindlessness. It's unabashed glorification of dumbness for dumbness's sake."
Now we're talking.
"Bill and Ted are heroic in their ability to reduce some of history's great minds to their level." That is a brilliantly written thing, which I think it was written as genuine criticism. But in essence, it's like the perfect definition of what it was and why we like it.
Well, they weren't making a movie that was any different on its face. It was what it was. I remember one of the lines from the trailer from back in the day, which is just one of the many one-liners in Excellent Adventure. It's
and
dumb
it helps
and
with
funny.
The voice, too.
Yeah, whoa.
Interestingly enough, as Bill and or as Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter were prepping for the role,
yeah.
Alex Winter kind of helped with his own costume. He spent a bunch of time down on Venice Beach.
Okay.
And that's where he got the idea of the backwards cap with the hair pulled through.
Yeah.
That's something he just saw different people doing. Originally, they were going to be 14-year-olds that were bullied at school.
That goes deeper, doesn't it?
But then when they cast, well, because I think that was the comedy routine.
Sure.
Apparently, the two guys together, I got this from Wikipedia for what it's worth, so I don't know how true it is, but they worked together, and these were sourced quotations on Wikipedia, too, so at
Fair
least
enough.
There's something to
yeah.
it. They kind of worked in the genuineness in the dialogue, so it wasn't just empty-headed guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the we're going to fail most bodaciously. Like, they obviously have some understanding of the English language.
Right.
And a fairly robust vocabulary.
Oh, absolutely.
The fact that they mix it in with dudes and excellence,
it's
that
fantastic.
Whole juxtaposition of this is partly what makes it funny and partly what keeps it from just being a mindless teenage comedy, because there's a ton of mindless teenage comedies that you may have laughed at when you were a teenager and then you watch them again and you're just like, well, that's going to have to go on the dust heap of history. But the fact that your teenagers still think Bill and Ted's is funny,
yeah.
And I didn't think mine would think it was funny. I always felt like it was dated to the era. I really did.
Right.
And I thought that at the time, too, because it came out, and I was a huge fan of the Naked Gun movie. And that
oh,
was
absolutely.
That had come out sometime in the same
yeah.
era. So for me, the Naked Gun was the pinnacle of comedy, and
sure.
I loved it.
Oh, sure. Still is, actually.
And Bill and Ted's comes in, and I'm like, eh, it kind of looks funny. And then a lot of the kids at the junior high were all talking about it. And the girl that sat in front of me in math class who was pretty but kind of like – do you remember in The Wedding Singer?
Yeah.
Adam Sandler, the girl he almost married
instead
of Drew Barrymore?
Yeah.
It was like her.
Sure.
She'd wear the rocker shirts
to
school and stuff like that. So I was like, this is a movie for Emberly, but not me.
Right.
And then I saw it and I was like, okay, that actually is pretty funny. And then everyone was quoting it. So you feel that pressure of, I got to see it myself. I got to join in on the quotations.
Yeah.
And thankfully, it turned out to be pretty funny and memorable. And, you know, Lincoln saying, party on, dudes.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those movies that, if you consider it, it is a movie of the time, in that think about the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and what you have. In the 90s, you had like disaster movies of, you know, End of Times, Apocalyptic, Independence yes. Day, Armageddon, Deep Impact, because Twister, you know, these, because technology was getting to the point where you could have that. It was also the 90s and everything was kind of
extreme, rad.
But it was all, you know, there wasn't any serious. It was before 9/11,
true.
Right? And so
true.
You had to bring about the tension of possible apocalyptic scenarios. The 80s.
After 2020, that's a different story.
Right. I mean, now what do? You show movies with empty streets now and you go, yeah, okay. It was probably just 2020. In the 80s, though, you had time travel. You had Terminator, time travel.
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future, Back to the Future Part 2, time travel. Before Bill
Peggy
and Ted
Sue got
is.
Married.
Right. You have all these time travel things. Bill and Ted, actually, if you look at it, yes, mindless, dumb, whatever, but it was crafted so well, because at the beginning of the movie, they're down and out. What do we do? Oh, no. You do not doubt that they are best friends who care about each other, and they're going to get separated. And so what happens? They're sitting at the Circle K, right?
Strange.
And they appear to themselves in that Rufus piloted,
Well, Rufus
phone
shows
booth,
up first.
Right? He shows up.
And then they show
and
up
they
a
show
second
up,
later.
And that loops you in to what will happen later. And then they do it later. So there are some movies like Back to the Future. It took two movies to do that, where in the second movie, it's so clever
Marty's
that he goes back
out,
and sees
right.
himself doing what he did in a previous movie. This one kind of borrows the idea, steals it, and puts it all together. But it does it so well.
Here's a funny little bit of trivia. Back to the Future actually premiered in November of 89.
Ah.
So Bill and Ted's
excellent.
Did it first.
Excellent, to borrow the word excellent.
Although I'm sure it was in the plans.
Yeah.
But.
Well, but that's the thing. And you know how Hollywood is, and script writers and screenwriters and producers are all kind of interspersed in the studios. And they know what's happening. That's why movies come out that are the same movie, basically.
Agreed.
Wyatt Earp and Tombstone come out, you know, and you wonder if they're all connected. But I will say, It was such a cool thing. You know how here in Salt Lake City, you think about Dumb and Dumber was shot here, Sandlot was shot here, and so all the locations.
High School Musical.
And so you think about the locations, and you look around, and it's fun if they stand the test of time. Bill and Ted is kind of an Arizona thing, because it doesn't take place in San Dimas. It takes place in Phoenix and Tempe and Mesa.
Standing in for San Dimas.
Right. There are a few exterior shots, but otherwise, the house, the school, San Dimas High School, that's, I think, McClintock High School in Phoenix, and the water park where Napoleon goes, Waterloo, that's a place called...
That they did
Well, it's a place called Golfland Sunsplash, where I've taken my kids, and so now when you watch the movie, you go, wait a second! That's all these places. I think the mall was Metro Center Mall, which is now closed down in Phoenix, too. So that's always a fun thing to kind of connect it to that, the actual filming. And I think if you can do that with a movie, again, like Dumb and Dumber, I throw that out there because I watched it the other day, and I'm like, well, this is
Salt Lake International,
City.
Yep.
That's Sandy. That's just a few blocks away from KSL Broadcast House here, where they show their apartment in Providence, Rhode Island, allegedly, right? So
yes.
it's those fun things, quirky pop cultural things that can kind of keep it going to become, I don't want to say cult status, because it was a success.
It was cult status, but it was also
it was a
cult.
Success, but now it's more of a cult thing. Yeah.
Interesting that you mentioned Phoenix. I was actually going to ask you about that,
yeah.
Considering I didn't realize how much of it was filmed in Phoenix till I was doing research on the movie. McClintock High, you say?
I believe so.
Because they tore it down and rebuilt it.
Well,
but they moved the roof of the gym, which is the external establishing
yeah.
shot. They moved it to the new school
so
that they would keep the roof and keep the same view that it had.
See, I'll have to – it could be McClintock. I'm probably saying the wrong
one. Did you ever go to those spots when you were that age?
No, because it wasn't until I moved to Phoenix about 10 years ago that I really kind of connected the dots. I lived in southern Arizona, Tucson area. We would go up to like Metro Center Mall, but I don't think I put two and two together. And it wasn't until I had my own kids that we discovered the water park. And you always go past the Circle K. You know, strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
And that was a Circle K in Phoenix, or no, Tempe.
It's in Tempe. It's just – it's
down
the block.
Is it still a Circle K?
Oh, yeah. It's down the block.
All the ones here closed.
Right. You can't go to the 7-Eleven where he says big gulps on Dumb and Dumber, that kind of thing. But you can go to the Circle K, sit right where the phone booth was, and it's on Hardy Drive, I believe, in Tempe. Hardy and Baseline, I think, is where it is. Just down from ASU, Arizona State. And so every time I would drive past that working in television news, I would always look and go, oh, strange things are afoot at the Circle K, you know, because it's a funny thing to again, connect you to filming locations.
Especially to people who may be visiting from out of town or new to the area. You could be like, hey, guess what that is?
Isn't that funny, though, that the things that are shot? I mean, some places could talk about, well, Star Wars or other big time movies. You say Bill and Ted. But it was one of those movies where you go, yeah, Bill and Ted was shot right around this area.
But it's fun with that is that it's probably most people, they didn't realize, just like me, that it was shot in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Like, you could have done that to me yesterday, and I would have been like, what?
It's
no
not
way.
San
That's
Dimas?
So cool. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't know if it was shot in San Diego.
Right.
I just assumed California, because everything is in California.
Right, yeah.
California stands in for everywhere else. So
yeah.
I guess
at
Salt
the
Lake
time,
has often stood in for 20 years ago California, no
sure.
matter what era Salt Lake is in. It's California from 20 years before that.
It all depends,
the
as you know,
lot.
On the tax breaks you can get. So at the time, Arizona must have been giving good tax breaks. They don't know.
American
now,
Ninja 2. There's a circling shot from a helicopter at the end.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to have taken place in Los Angeles. And there's the old Salt Palace Dome and the Salt Lake Temple.
Of course.
Like,
LA.
Sure, downtown LA.
Yeah, why not? The notable landmarks.
All right. You know what? Let's do this. We got to take a break really quick right here. And when we get back, we will actually talk about Bill and Ted Face
Excellent.
The Music. And if we get derailed, you know, the magic of having a phone booth is fixing it all later.
That's right.
And making it sound the way you wanted to in the first place.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Fan Effect Podcast, we're talking Bill and Ted, the franchise, and specifically Bill and Ted Face the Music. Joining me for this episode is Dan Spindle, KSL 5 TV in Salt Lake City's morning news anchor for the show KSL Today, of which, full disclosure, I am an occasional participant. I used to be the traffic guy for their show. Now I get to review movies, which, to be quite honest, is a lot more fun. I'm just going to say that right there. So we're talking Bill and Ted's. Did you find out if it was McClintock High?
I think it might be Coronado. I knew it was one of those. I'm going to say maybe Coronado. For those, I mean, all of you listening to this podcast who are familiar with the Phoenix area.
Well, see, this is the thing.
Me.
Your relatives who listen to this
know,
will
I
now.
Know. Yeah, you're going to correct me on that.
Well, no, that's all right. Okay, so.
Either way.
Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Yes.
We're at Missy's wedding. We've laughed hilariously that it's Missy and that she's marrying Deacon. Which, sure, why not? And
right.
It's Beck Bennett from Saturday Night Live.
Right. Oh, he's funny.
That. Bill and Ted are struggling musicians now.
Right.
They're producing whatever that was, which
I
made
mean,
me laugh out loud.
It was trying way too hard to incorporate this Zen worldwide music, you know, using different instruments.
Trying too hard to create the
right.
perfect song.
Well, Ted grabs the bagpipes. I mean, it's really kind of funny.
And, you know, interestingly enough was the line from that scene. Here, we'll play it right here.
Bill, we've spent our whole life trying to unite the world. And I'm tired, dude.
Ted, we have a destiny to fulfill.
This,
I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did that at the beginning of the movie, but I also was like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, you look tired, Ted.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Keanu,
you look
tired.
Yes.
And like, are you sure you wanted to revisit this role?
For sure.
And
yeah. It's funny because when I heard him doing the voice, I thought, isn't this ironic how he created this surfer voice, whoa, and everyone has always associated Keanu Reeves with this surfer dude, and he
well, that
seemed
was even
be
the role he played in Parenthood when he was
right?
supposed to be like a young married or a guy with a young kid, and he like looks through the X-ray glasses at his
well,
head.
And you know, in The Matrix or John Wick, whatever he's in, he sounded like that, but to me, it kind of felt at first like Keanu Reeves himself was trying to find the character of Ted, and I'm going, wait a second, you are Ted. Everything about you is Ted.
But that was, to me, and this was one of the things I wanted to go into long more on the TV review, which we didn't have time for, but
yeah.
It is impossible to not see John Wick and Neo now.
Right.
To me, that's one of the fascinating things about Bill and Ted Face the Music is
yeah.
you can't not see Neo or even Point Break.
Sure.
Like he went and Speed and he went and did these movies that became big things that was kind of for a while a disassociation from Ted.
For sure.
Although it was by degrees because Point Break, he was still a surfer. That's how he infiltrates the gang. By Speed, he's now kind of a grown-up cop.
Right.
Then in The Matrix, he's a full-blown action star.
Oh, yeah.
And then John Wick, he's a full-blown hard R-rated action star. And he does rom-com. I mean, he's like having a Chuck Norris of movies
the
sort
Lake
of
House.
Moment. He can do nothing wrong.
Right.
He was in the Netflix movie with Always Be My Maybe. Like, he had a hilarious cameo that everybody was talking about. He's playing himself, but who's also in love with the main character of Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, boy. Well, the good thing that this points out is that it must have been a good enough script to get him back into it. And he and Alex Winter have a great relationship to the point where he said, you know what, this is worth my time, and it's not about reputation anymore, and perhaps it's actually good. I mean, I that's what I like about it is that I think that these two stars believe this is actually worthwhile for you, the viewer, to watch. And I was proven wrong because I saw the trailer, thought, oh, boy, you convinced me to watch it. And we loved it. My kids and I loved it. My kids have already watched it twice. I've only seen it once. But we bought it. I mean, it was a $5 difference between buying and renting. But we bought it, and I'm glad we did.
I bought it. In fact, I bought the trilogy because I only had my DVD copies of the first two.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know, I have a huge Voodoo collection, like 600 movies,
might
digital
as well
locker. But I didn't have those because I had them on disc and I have them on my Plex server. So it's like, well, I don't want to spend the money for movies I already have. Do I like them that much? But then after seeing Face the Music, I was like, I do.
Gotta
now I need all three.
Yeah.
And that to me was one of the coolest things about this is, well, so it trades on nostalgia, obviously.
Sure.
There's no reason you'd come back to something 30 years later without a heavy dose of nostalgia.
Right.
But what I thought was really good was they brought back the writers Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon, the ones we mentioned earlier. But by having them having written all three of the movies, even as much as I hated Bogus Journey, they wrote it. So when they were writing this, they weren't borrowing on somebody else's work and trying to fix it necessarily. One of the complaints about Rise of Skywalker versus Last Jedi versus Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't trying, different writers weren't trying to fix each other's mistakes.
Same writers.
They could make it work.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt was, it was a seamless hook. It actually made Bogus Journey more enjoyable because it changed it from a shameless cash grab, what it felt like to me, to the second chapter in a three-part story.
Right.
Arguably, in my opinion, the weakest of chapters. But the things that happened in it lay the foundation for the stuff in the third, which I liked a lot better, and made the third part funnier. It also made the second part funnier by having the callback and it working, Death knowing how terrible he is at games.
Oh.
So that he would cheat with him on himself.
Oh, that was
his
so
first
funny.
Line is, "Have you come to get another restraining order against me?"
I mean, my gosh,
that was just funny.
How great were his daughters too? Both of their daughters.
Oh, yeah.
Who, if you look at the way, is it Bill's daughter Ted and Ted's
Bill's
daughter, Bill?
Thea and Thea's daughter Billy.
Thea, that's right.
Or Ted's daughter
Thea was so fantastic. Whoever it was, Billy, who was Ted's daughter.
I thought that
she embodied.
I thought Billy looked like Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. Like half the movie, I was like,
yes,
this is a
that's
girl,
true.
Right?
But
she sure looks
was,
like Finn Wolfhard.
She looked like she studied Keanu Reeves' movements from the first two Bill and Ted movies to perfectly execute exactly what it was written as, which was, wouldn't that be funny if Bill's daughter is like Ted and Ted's daughter is like Bill? And then their interactions were great. The chemistry was great.
Dude, our dads are totally in trouble.
You should help them out.
We're putting together a most extraordinary band.
Hey, you want to be in our band?
Oh.
Oh, this is fantastic.
But what a sweet story. Let me pull that in now, too, on the dad card. You're a dad. I'm a dad. I'm watching this with my kids. And my kids, I was kind of getting emotional at the end watching. I'm going, what is happening right now?
Yep.
This is Bill and Ted. And yet it hit great emotional notes, great comedy beats. So enjoyable. And what the daughters would do for
back
their dads.
And the daughters ended up. And that's why I thought it worked as a trilogy. Because, first of all, the part of the selling point and the humor of the original movie was this idea that Bill and Ted two stoner slackers.
Yeah.
The whole entire universe depends on what them. Two stoner slackers are doing, who are completely musically untalented.
They can't
and
play.
Not only do they have to write the song, they have to not fail their history report. So fate of the universe rests on a history report in Southern California. And then the next thing, you know, was like, okay, well, let's build on it. So Bill and Ted, let's go back and visit them. We got to figure out why they aren't the superstars yet. So they do their thing. And then all of a sudden you've got the third movie, which is the only way you can go back and revisit them is you can't just have them go 30 years without writing the perfect song, and then they write the perfect song.
Right.
But having it be like these kids that they did introduce in the second movie, and it's their kids. And so Bill and Ted had to pass that. Bill and Ted had to come back from the dead. Yeah. Bill and Ted had to become big icons so that this moment could happen to where their kids.
Yeah.
So everything matters. The visit to get the princesses.
Right.
Everything mattered. So that they could set it up, and it's the kids who end up assembling the band and creating the perfect song. And I figured out pretty quick in the movie when they kept saying Preston Logan, I was like, okay, it can't be Bill and Ted.
See, I didn't
figure
that out.
Or they would have done
good.
It already.
Well, and you know the problem with prequels and sequels and trying to connect everything with, like you said, with different writers. We'll call it the Star Wars problem where, you know, when George Lucas, who created the first thing, creates the prequels and then just decides that all of these lines really don't match up just because, and some of them he justifies, some of them he doesn't. In this one, I was going, wait, are the daughters the ones who save the world? But then what did they do at the end? Bill and Ted get to rock out on guitar, perfect harmony, essentially harmonizing all of the circuits of time.
As old men.
Aligning the planets.
Oh, I'm thinking of the post-credit scene when the old men were playing.
Well, how sweet were those scenes too with the old?
Are you dead yet?
Oh, my goodness.
No, dude.
But that was so surprisingly touching, honestly. It was surprisingly sweet moment after moment after moment in this movie, making it just so enjoyable. And we haven't even mentioned Dave Grohl. The Dave Grohl cameo, where they're in Dave Grohl's house, lead singer Foo Fighters, of course, saying that he was the one actually who wrote the great song that they were trying to steal from. What a funny, funny, clever movie.
And I loved it. It was when they started jumping through time that I really... Really, I got over the fact that they looked old because I knew that was going to be a thing. Ever since I saw Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yes.
And it was so hard to see Indy
Harrison
look so
Ford
old.
Was yeah, it was distracting.
And it was a little bit hard at the first of The Force Awakens, although I got past it. I will say this. You were saying something earlier, and I was going to mention this, but I'll bring it back now. Ted coming back to this role, it was a role that he loved. You could tell. Or else he wouldn't – I mean, this project was originally announced in 2010, and over the course of like 8 years till it was finally finalized that it was going to happen. It was rumored. It was on. It was off. They had a script they liked. They did this. Keanu Reeves would have just killed it all initially, but he loves the character.
Right.
And it was the character that really kind of launched him. But that's the difference between – and I hate to say Harrison Ford, but that's what I was thinking of – Harrison Ford doesn't necessarily want to revisit Han Solo, but they gave him enough money that he did.
Sure.
Now, to his credit, I felt like he actually gave it his all.
Absolutely
in playing
it. For sure, yeah.
But you also watched it knowing that the only reason he was there was for the money.
Right.
But you watch Ted, you watch Keanu Reeves' Ted, and you're sure he got some money for it. But you also knew that it was there because otherwise he would have killed this thing.
Yeah.
He would have killed this thing 10 years ago. He's been saying all along for 10 years that he was good as long as it had the right script. He wanted to do it again. And that's where they got to.
Well,
and it showed. It came through in the characters.
And they're also not giving him $35 million or whatever Harrison Ford got to come back in The Force Awakens. I mean, Harrison Ford's very clear that acting to him is industry.
It's a job.
About getting the job done, and he does a great job.
But he throws himself into it. So that's what I say. Yeah. I don't want to bag on Harrison Ford.
No, not at all. He's
but it
one
was
of my
known,
favorites of all
and
time.
You could tell
for sure
that he wasn't there. You'd read enough quotes from him over the years that you knew he wasn't there because he loved Han Solo and was glad to play him again. And I'll be interested to see. I know he'll throw himself into Indiana Jones 5, which is he'll be 85 years old or whatever.
Happen. Yeah, I'm going to call it right here on your podcast. It's not going to happen.
You don't think that movie's going to happen?
I don't think so. He's going to be 80 soon. You know what I mean?
But they've already filmed some of it.
Well, Steven Spielberg pulled out of it too. So
when?
He pulled months ago. He announced he's out. So I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay, if that's the case, then it's not going to happen.
That was a key
heard
to
that.
Me. Yeah. As far as Bill and Ted, though, I mean, what I loved about it is that it didn't try too hard. It doesn't pretend to be something that it's not. And yet, I think it is surprisingly... Oh, dare I use the word deep, or should I say most profound? I mean, to go under some of these themes of friendship, love, and unlimited possibilities to fulfill whatever destiny it is you choose for yourself. I mean, that's what's so great about it. Again, I'm cracking myself up here. I cannot believe I'm analyzing and dissecting Bill and Ted as a beautiful,
Work of art.
Much needed for 2020, my gosh, much needed work of pop cultural art.
And that was my final point, both in the review on TV and that I'm glad you brought it to this.
Yeah.
It's like comfort food. Who would have thought in 1989 that the third sequel to a movie that took them almost 30 years to get to would feel like comfort food based on where we were as a country, based on everything that we'd gone through over the past 30 years, and just at the right time. Like, I'm glad this was the first one. It wasn't the one that was going to drag people back to the movieplexes. I still think that's going to be Black Widow. That's just me. But it was one that I'm glad they decided to do both, because if they just had the theatrical release, then, first of all, you and I wouldn't be talking about this, because I doubt you would have dragged your kids to the theater to see it.
Maybe, but probably not.
It was a lot easier for the fact that you could get it at home.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And pay, and you get to keep it.
For sure.
And,
yeah.
And I'm glad that I bought it, because now my brother in England can watch it, and I can watch it with my kids at home. And I wanted to see it first before I had them watch it. But they're just as excited to see it as it sounds like you kids were to actually watch it.
Well, I hope others watch it, too. And that's the thing. How funny is that, that the original plot of Bill and Ted, a couple dudes unite the universe, and George Carlin delivering it in this deadpan. I mean,
how about emotional thinking George Carlin would have loved this?
Oh, again, it's one of those things, the image of him at the beginning
when they're walking past.
Oh, it was a beautiful tribute. I mean, and it wasn't forced. It worked well. And
you know what? We haven't even talked about Dennis Caleb McCoy.
Oh, the robot. Oh, my gosh.
We don't have time, but let's just say brilliant.
Your new favorite character.
Wait, I have a name. It's Dennis. Dennis McCoy.
Okay, let's go, Dennis McCoy.
Dennis Caleb McCoy. That's the full name.
Let's go, dude. How are we gonna find them, dude?
I don't know, dude.
Yeah, I don't even know, dude. I'm really sorry that I lasered you off. I just need to tell you my name. My name is Dennis Caleb McCoy. And I just want to say
this.
Brilliant.
Hey, guys, I'm this killer robot from the future. Oh, so funny.
He looks like he's essentially the Terminator, the next generation of the Terminator. And it turns out he's a highly insecure robot
named after
the ex-boyfriend of the supreme leader of the universe's daughter.
The funniest thing is when you cannot watch a movie with me. My kids, my wife, they hate it because I have the remote and I pause it all the time so that I can laugh and catch my breath. This is the kind of movie that does that with these funny little moments. And who would have thought Bill and Ted, who in the movies unite the world with peace and love and harmony in 2020. Honestly, if you give yourself a chance and watch this movie, let yourself go. Forget about what you think about Bill and Ted or Keanu Reeves or whatever. And it's just so enjoyable. We loved it.
Take our enthusiastic recommendation and just enjoy it for what it is. It's like eating macaroni and cheese in a movie.
With extra cheese and maybe some Cheetos on top.
And the way your mom used to make it.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Well, Dan Spindle, KSL TV, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. Hopefully we'll get you back. I know you're a big Star Wars guy, so we talk Star Wars on here all the time.
Mandalorian's coming up, season
Mandalorian
two.
Season 2. That's right.
I'd love to. Thanks, Andy.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here. We invite you, if this is your first time listening to Fan Effect, to become a subscriber. We're available on Spotify, we're available on Apple Podcasts, and on whatever Google Play Music is now. I think it's YouTube Music or whatever. You can get us there. Search Fan Effect, EFFECT.
You can also follow us on Twitter.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.